Caroline, Willie, D-Mays, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. We're live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook Sports. Ask D-Mays in 30 minutes. Get those questions in for D-Mays. We'll get your calls. We'll get your texts. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. So Bill Polian, of course, former GM of the Buffalo Bills, one of the winningest general managers in the history of the National Football League, has a podcast called Inside Football with Bill Polian. And I think that this draft is so intriguing for so many different reasons. One, the Titans being such a wild card. And two, the quarterbacks also being such wild cards. You have several quarterback needy teams or several teams out there that could upgrade at the quarterback position, the Tennessee Titans being one of them. And you have two quarterbacks that seem like the closest thing to a sure thing that you're going to get. And then you have Anthony Richardson, who has his pros and cons. Hendon Hooker with his pros and cons. Will Levis with his pros and cons. Several quarterbacks in this year's draft that are, yeah, he's good, but yes, he has upside, but so on and so forth. So it's, and we've talked about the fits with the Tennessee Titans, but it's interesting to see the point of view from a former general manager, a general manager whose job it was to evaluate quarterbacks, because as Rand Carthon said, that's a position that gets you hired and fired. So on his podcast, the Inside Football Podcast, Bill Polian broke down two very polarizing quarterbacks or divisive quarterbacks, quarterbacks with pros and cons. The first one that Bill Polian breaks down, of course, is Kentucky quarterback Will Levis.
Will Levis from Kentucky. Here's the worrisome statistic. 46 TDs, 25 interceptions. You want that ratio to be 2-1, and he's not there. So that's the worrisome number. To his traits, arm strength, quickness of release, footwork, play strength, defensive recognition, physical and mental toughness, all are excellent. His accuracy on deep throws and his ball placement and accuracy on shorter routes such as swing passes and shallow crosses is worrisome. It's average at best. His touch is pretty good. He recognizes defenses well. He has some difficulty with blitz recognition from time to time, but that's understandable. Most quarterbacks do, particularly sophisticated blindside blitzes. He's big and strong, a good runner. His accuracy on RPOs and bootlegs and extended plays is above average, and he's a real threat to run. For a big guy in these circumstances, he reminds you some of Roethlisberger in that regard. In fact, he has a lot of Roethlisberger physical traits. The question is consistent accuracy and ball placement. I would give him a first-round grade.
Okay, first-round grade from Bill Polian for Will Levis. Mm-hmm. Now, first-round grade doesn't necessarily mean top five.
No.
Doesn't necessarily mean top 10. But I think that Bill Polian breaks down kind of what we already knew about Will Levis. Mm-hmm. He does some things really well, but he struggles with some things, with accuracy. Just look at the Tennessee-Kentucky game this past year, and you will see those accuracy issues on full display. But watch the Ole Miss-Kentucky game from this past year, and you will see the toughness that he displays on full display. His finger was at a 90-degree angle, and he still went back out there. So I think Bill Polian's kind of breaking down what we kind of already knew about him.
I enjoyed watching the Vanderbilt-Kentucky game.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm sure you did, Willie.
Oh, did I say that? Yeah, okay. That turned out pretty good for the Commodore.
But I think also he points out, he compares him to Ben Roethlisberger. If you told me today that you could have Ben Roethlisberger, I think you'd do that in a heartbeat, would you not?
Sure.
Yeah, but I mean.
But this happens every year, right? There's always the guy.
Yes.
Derek Mason reminds me of.
Such and such person.
Cliff Branch. Like, I don't know who they say.
I think it, you know, in regards to a Ben Roethlisberger, and I haven't looked up his stats. But I'm sure Ben was a little bit more consistent than Will Levis. So he maybe had, his stats were a little bit better. He had more of a body of work. Again, I didn't follow Ben too much when he was at, Miami of Ohio?
Yeah.
That's where he went? Yeah. But I'm sure that, you know, yes, there are some traits that are – similar, big, strong, physical, can throw the ball a mile, but I don't know if Ben had some of these sort of issues that Will Levis has in college. Again, I didn't follow Ben back then, but Ben was what? He was drafted, 13th overall, somewhere
yeah,
around
he
there?
Yeah, he slipped a little bit. I'll never forget his family. his family was sitting there right in the draft room, and whoever was picking, I don't know, fifth or sixth, he it, like you could tell, like the TV, Mel Kiper's like, I think they're gonna go Roethlisberger here, and like they, and it didn't happen, and they were so crushed. Oh, we were supposed to go sixth, and we're not going. And it turned out pretty well for Ben, right? The Steelers picked him. Things worked out.
Rest is history.
Yeah. Sometimes it's okay to slip a couple notches.
Sometimes things work out. Worked out for Tom Brady pretty well. Bill Polian also breaks down Hendon Hooker. This was Bill Polian on the Inside Football Podcast.
Hendon Hooker, he's got an excellent release. It's a little bit elongated, but I don't worry too much about that. If the ball gets out on time, that's what you care about. And the velocity of the ball is what you care about, and his arm is excellent. It's a very easy motion. He's got pretty good touch on the ball. To the extent that he has to in the offense, he can read it and reload, and he's very slippery running the option. The negatives, he throws a bit flat-footed. I like to see his feet a little more animated in the pocket. His acceleration on mid-range throws could be a little bit better. He doesn't have a lot of shake and bake when he escapes, and there are times when he'll misread coverages. That's understandable. He hasn't played much, especially in that offense. He has some difficulty seeing blitzes, particularly backside blitzes that are well-timed, but that's not disqualifying. He's tough as can be. You know, he fights to the very end. He's a good leader. This is a guy that I think under normal circumstances you might be thinking about at the end of the first round. But now with the injury, it might push him down into the second. But I think there's enough to work with here. And I had pretty close ties to someone in the Tennessee program who's no longer there, who told me that this is an incredibly good young man. He's really a great kid, works hard. You want to play for him. He's really an outstanding person.
Okay, so in my opinion, just based on listening to those two clips, it sounds to me like Bill Polian's a little bit more excited about Hendon Hooker, yet labels Hendon Hooker a second-round quarterback versus Will Levis with a first-round grade.
Yeah, that's the way it sounded. And when I was listening to it yesterday, it sort of, you know, I, on one hand, I'm like, okay, I see what he's talking about. In regards to both guys, but then you label one guy, basically you're a first rounder in Will Levis, but it's like you had more raving things to say about Hendon Hooker, but you said, ah, he's a second rounder. So is he a second rounder because of the injury and the age? Because when you're talking about his play, it seemed you're talking about a first round guy. You know, the things that you want to see in a quarterback, the accuracy, the touch, getting better each and every year, being a leader. These are all things that we describe of a first-round pick, but you're saying he's a second-round. So why is Will – are you looking more at – when you're looking at Will Levis, it's more like sort of looking at Anthony Richardson. What he could be. If he straightens out the accuracy things, what he could be if, you know, he does this and does that. Is that what you're basing your draft prediction on, what he could be, rather than what we see now? Because what we see now, I believe, is Hendon Hooker is better than Will Levis. But does Will Levis ceiling rise a little bit higher if he put all the rest of these things that are cons, if he puts it all together and makes it a plus rather than a minus for him? Now, if he does that, okay, does he? But you can say that about Richardson. I think that's the intriguing thing about Richardson too. You see all these negatives that may keep him out of the first round, but you see all of these things that, man, you know, gosh, if we can put all this together, this is a first round guy. So to me, is that how you're evaluating Levis and Hooker and why you think one guy is a first round and one guy is not?
You know what's interesting? When I listened to him, two things I didn't hear him factor in, which I guess tells me he doesn't prioritize these things. Didn't talk about the system that either guy played in, really. And he didn't talk about the fact that both of these guys are a little bit older than some of the other prospects, right? That didn't seem to matter to him that much. So it's intriguing to me because I do think that you hear other people, they will factor in. Now, if you ask Bill Polian, he might have an answer for that. He just chose not to do it there, so that might not be here or there, but he didn't, when he did that piece for his production, he did not mention either one of those things. And let's go back to something we've referenced a lot this week, Bruce Feldman's mock draft, where he had the unnamed sources. What did he say about Will Levis, or at least the person that game planned or schemed? He said, it was very interesting how 2 years ago, he felt like they had a much better identity overall as an offense at Kentucky, and therefore Will Levis had a much better year. The offensive line was better. His numbers were better. The team was better. Last year, the offensive line wasn't good. He said last year the O-line stunk, and the system wasn't good.
They had a new OC last year.
Yes. Mm-hmm. He said they were like this smorgasbord of stuff and didn't have any identity. I thought he was seeing ghosts. Based off of 2 years ago, I think he can be a really good player, a Josh Allen type. I think he can do it. He's big and strong. He was accurate as a junior. He played with more touch. I don't think he'll be able to create like Richardson in the pros. I think he's got to be protected. Whenever he was under duress, though, he started seeing ghosts and making poor decisions. So is that a product of the system, or is that a product of something that could be a caution flag for him going forward in terms of reads?
And the system was something that Mel Kiper pointed out yesterday, or 2 days ago, whenever it was, recently. He pointed out, you know, the system is a red flag for me because Joe Milton balled out against Clemson in that system.
But we've all marveled at the system for Tennessee, right? And Hendon Hooker, like, man, they got guys wide open on every play, it seems like, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it seemed like to me that the takeaways that I got from Polian's comparison between Levis and Hooker was he pointed out the things that kind of the negatives of Hendon Hooker, the accuracy issues, they're there. The tendency to turn the ball over. I don't know what his touchdown interception ratio was, not 2-1 like Bill Polian said. But a lot of the things that he pointed out about Hendon Hooker that weren't necessarily glowing recommendations, whether it be misreading coverages or not being the most elusive quarterback. So those are all things you can work on. Misreading coverages, well, it's probably because he doesn't have a ton of experience in that system, or, you know, not being the most agile on your feet. Well, you know, that'll come probably if you get a little bit more comfortable. So it seemed like, to me, the takeaways that I got were Hendon Hooker's things that aren't A pluses, those can be worked on. You know, those can be groomed. Will Levis's things, every interception has a different story. I don't know exactly what all of those stories were, but it's not accuracy or, you know, your tendency to turn the ball over. Those are all red flags. Can they be worked on? Can they not? It depends on whatever the story was. But let's continue on the other side. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll get your thoughts on that as well. Caroline, Willie, D-Mays, 1025-1063, the game. Caroline, Willie, D-Mays, 1025-1063, the game in the Game Nashville app. Ask D-Mays in 15 minutes. Get those questions in for D-Mays. We'll take your text, take your calls. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. And remember, the best question for D-Mays will win a nice little prize. Oh,
you can ask about the spinners. Exactly. It's a little Detroit sound for you there, D-Mays. The spinners. Rubber band man. This is a good at-bat song right here. I like this. It's a good at-bat song.
Breaking down Brian Polian's evaluation of Hendon Hooker and Will Levis. Of course, Brian Polian is the former special teams coordinator for LSU. Mm-hmm. His son.
Okay.
Bill Polian, former general manager for the Buffalo Bills, one of the winningest general managers in NFL history. He gives his evaluation on Will Levis versus Hendon Hooker. But D-Mays, before the break, you had a thought.
No, I didn't.
Was the thought about the Winnipeg weather?
Because
I'm going to experience that here very soon. I've got to get to the airport. It was four this morning.
I know it was in regards to Hendon Hooker because you finished up with it. But it wasn't – I don't think it was a take where I needed to, like, really elaborate on it or go into it. It was just almost like, let me see. We got to go to break. So then I forget it.
But I think the interesting thing about Hendon Hooker is, though, because Bill Polian he mentions Will Levis. He gives him a first-round grade. Didn't give Hendon Hooker a grade, so to speak, but said he sees him more as a second-round guy. Do either of you see Hendon Hooker realistically falling to day two? Because the way that I see the trend over the last couple of weeks, Hendon Hooker's creeping up in the mock drafts. And, of course, mock drafts really mean nothing. You know, draft day is absolute madness and chaos. Do you realistically see Hendon Hooker ending up being a second-day guy?
I don't. But my thought is, wouldn't we have maybe said that about Malik Willis last year? And he was still sitting there in the third round. So
fair.
So not every year is the same, but it does seem like more often than not, the quarterback that's getting a lot of talk slides up and somebody reaches for that guy more often than not.
Is if there is going to be, and I think there is going to be in this year's draft, a guy kind of like a Malik Willis or a Desmond Ridder, guys who are predicted to be first-round picks, really more so Malik Willis. He got so much first-round hype. Would you be surprised if there's a guy very Malik Willis-esque in this year's draft, whether it's a Hendon Hooker or Will Levis, that slide maybe not all the way to the third round, but a lot lower than we initially anticipated?
I think there's going to be two guys, and I think it's it may be three, but I think definitely it more than likely may be two, and I think it was the two guys that we're talking about. I think there's a possibility Anthony Richardson may fall a little bit once it's all said and done, because right now you look at it and everybody's just intrigued and everybody's trying to figure things out and everybody's excited. But I think the closer and closer, and you can do it now because it's GMs can do it, coaches can do it, fans can do it, analysts can do it, because right now it doesn't mean anything. It means nothing. It means nothing. It means something on draft day when, you know, on the clock, the Carolina Panthers, they have 15 minutes. I think it's 15 minutes or 12 minutes to make their draft. I know they cut it down for time's sake. But that's when it starts to mean something. When that stop clock goes and you are on the clock to get ready to make your pick. That's when it's going to mean something. All this stuff that everyone's doing right now, it doesn't mean anything to the teams that have to draft. It starts to mean something when you're actually on the clock and you're looking at the board and you're like, it's a little bit easier possibly for Carolina, because I think in their mind they're going to have who they want at number one. Hell, they got to pick of all 1,500 guys that are draft eligible, so they can pick anybody, but we know they're going to go for a quarterback, or we assume. But draft day, usually every draft, there's at least four or five guys that are either gets drafted higher than what we thought, and it's probably more than that. I'm just talking in the first two rounds, or a little bit lower than what we thought. And I think these two guys, I think he may slip down, but Hendon Hooker and Will Levis, I think both of them will still end up getting drafted in the first round, but I think it may be a lot lower than what we may have first thought. Hell, these quarterbacks may get past 11, both of them. And we look at it like, wow, the Titans need a quarterback, and they're getting past 11. But the Titans can also move out of that spot and choose to move down, because they still see these two quarterbacks on the board. So they may choose to move to 15 or 13 or 16, because in their minds, they will still be able to get one of these quarterbacks if they like them.
I think almost for certain Hendon Hooker will be there at 11.
Yeah.
With Will Levis, I hear Bill Polian saying he gives him a first-round grade. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of been a unanimous decision or a unanimous thought around NFL circles, is that Will Levis is a first-round quarterback. But not all first-round quarterbacks are created equal. Mm-hmm. Because your first overall pick versus the 31st pick in the first round, they're not going to be graded the same. They may end up differently. I mean, Aaron Rodgers was the end of the first round, and I don't even know what other quarterbacks were in his draft, but fair to say he probably outperformed them.
Exactly.
I hear Bill Polian, but a 31 versus a 1 is very different. Mm-hmm. I think that Will Levis is a first-round quarterback. I do not think that Will Levis is a top-5 pick in this year's draft, but I think he's going to be. Unless it's a smokescreen, because Indianapolis has loved Will Levis, or at least they've put that out there, that they worked out Will Levis in Lexington, I believe it was yesterday, maybe 2 days ago. But all of the reports that I'm getting from, you know, the NFL draft gurus and this coach that Peter King talked to in this article on Football Morning America says that there's a coach in the NFL that gave him a second round grade. Mm-hmm. And even listening to Bill Polian's breakdown, even though he gives him a first round grade, it's still, hey, the touchdown interception ratio is not that great. Hey, his accuracy is faltering at times. Those are all things that are very clear concerns about your future potential franchise quarterback. So I don't think that you can take a guy in the top five that has that many question marks going into the draft. Now, we know that there have been plenty of top five picks that haven't panned out how you'd expect a top five pick to pan out. There have been plenty of first round or first overall quarterbacks that haven't panned out how you would expect a first overall quarterback to pan out. I know that. But I don't think that Will Levis is a top five pick, nor do I think that he should be taken in the top five, but I just think that he will be. But it all depends on Indianapolis.
Because of the circumstance, the teams that are picking. So you have Carolina, Houston.
Houston is two.
And then Arizona.
Arizona's three.
Indianapolis, four.
Seattle, five.
I think a lot of it, I can even see, because you may be right in, you know, I could be wrong. I could be right. I don't know. But you could be right from this standpoint. He's not a top five quarterback if you're picking within the top five. So Indianapolis may think that same thing. And they may choose to. Why? I don't know. Maybe there's some strategy to it. Maybe they move out of the fourth spot because they don't want to draft him that high, knowing that if they move a few spots back, that he's still going to be there. Now, you got to be worried about Vegas and the Titans, potentially. If you want to move back, then they try to somehow move up. But you figure, if a team is trading with me, because I'm not going to trade with a team that needs a quarterback. That's what I'm not doing. But if a team is trading with me at that fourth spot, they're not looking to then trade that fourth spot again to move back. So say if you know, who has that eighth spot? Somebody. I don't know who has it. Say if they say, you know what, we want to move from 8 to 4 because we want Will Anderson. Just say for instance, we want Will Anderson or Jalen Carter. Well, you make that move because then you might pick up another pick. Because Indianapolis still have some holes they got to fill. Not a lot of them, but they still have holes they have to fill. So not only are you swapping, but you're also getting another pick somewhere else. And you're doing it strategically because you know that you still can get your guy at, say, 6 or 8. Now, if you move to 8, you got to be worried about the Vegas Raiders taking your quarterback. But if you move down to 6, then you pick up another pick somewhere else and you're still able to get the quarterback that you want, but you're not getting them in the first 5 picks. I don't know how much that changes in regards to how much you're going to pay them and all this other stuff. And does it really even make sense to just move, you know, what was it, 4 spaces, 3 spaces? But they could be looking at it from that standpoint if they want an extra pick down the line.
And if they even wanted Will Levis.
Yeah, even if they want. Yeah, you're right.
Remember last year with the Steelers?
Mm-hmm.
It was the Steelers love Malik Willis. Mike Tomlin loves Malik Willis. The Steelers are working out Malik Willis. Malik Willis to the Steelers, Malik Willis to Pittsburgh, so on and so forth. The Steelers did not pick Malik Willis. They took the first quarterback off the board, and it was Kenny Pickett. And everyone was like, what? Kenny Pickett, really? After all that with Malik Willis? So I wouldn't be surprised if Indianapolis is trying to put up a smokescreen of, oh my goodness, we love Will Levis, and then say maybe the Raiders love Will Levis. Well, then the Raiders are going to move up to 3 and take Will Levis, and Indianapolis is like, ha, didn't want him anyways.
Exactly.
We'll take Anthony Richardson at 4. So you really never know. A lot of these things that come out, I always think, do you love him or are you playing games?
Could be, I mean, it could be one of, it could be both.
Could be both. They could love him.
They could love him, but not want to draft him that high. And they would rather, if we can't get him, then we really like this other person. Even, you know, he's like our, we like them both the same. So if he's not there, we'll take him. It doesn't matter to us.
And we'll pick up picks in the process.
Exactly.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. Ask D. Mace is coming up next. We'll get your calls, your texts, all of your questions for D-Mace, and the best question for D-Mace will win a nice prize, which we will reveal coming up next. It is Caroline Billy, D-Mace, 1025-1063, The Game.
D-Mace. He played 15 years in the NFL.
A quick throw. Touchdown, Derek Mason.
He had over 12,000 receiving yards.
Midfield, and there he goes. 80 yards for the touchdown.
And now you can ask him anything. Have a question about football or life? Now's your time to ask D-Mace.
We'll welcome you in.
Now on Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace. On 102.5 and 106.3, The Game and the Game Nashville app.
Ask D-Mace is brought to you by Curation CBD. You can find their healing products at curationcompany.com. Curation CBD products curated for life. Use promo code D-Mace, D-M-A-S-E, at curationcompany.com for 25% off Curation CBD products. D-Mace, the people have some questions, so without further ado.
Hey, let's go to the questions. Come on, bring them on.
Let's get to it. Phone lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. If you have a question for D-Mace, we'll take your calls and your texts. First question comes from Bullseye Circle.
Ooh.
It says, would D-Mace have worn zero, and could the number be an advantage for a quarterback?
Well, thank you for the question, Bullseye. And no, I would have never worn zero. And I don't know if there's enough data in place to know if it's an advantage for a quarterback or not.
That's not a quarterback number.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. But I would have, zero just, it just looked weird on a jersey. Number zero looks weird on a jersey. And then what if somebody has double zero? That looks even worse. On a jersey.
That's a mascot.
Yeah. I'm not down with the whole zero number thing, you know.
Derek, that just means he's not going to allow any touchdowns, right?
Yeah, I guess so. Or not catch any touchdowns.
That is also the other side of that. I honestly love it.
You love the zero?
I love the number zero because I feel like it takes a certain personality to wear a number zero. Like, I think that whenever this first became a thing, it was allowed in college football. This was when Ja'Marr Chase was still in college. And me and my LSU friends were saying, Ja'Marr Chase would be such a cool number zero.
Uh-huh.
He just has the swag to be able to wear that number. That's not a number that anyone can wear. So I kind of love it, honestly. The number zero energy brings the same, like, number one energy. It takes a certain kind of flair.
That number one energy is totally different.
You think?
From the number zero energy. Because it's just... The number one is just different. Number zero is, I don't know. Maybe I got to get used to it. Maybe I got to get used to seeing it.
It's new.
Russell Westbrook wears it in basketball, and I sort of think we've gotten used to him. But okay. Basketball, I think, is different from the standpoint of, because I'm all about, you know, how does it look on a particular person, you know, body type and everything else. Well, Russell, 6'6", slim, you know, so the zero looks different on him. If you put a zero on Jeffrey Simmons, that's going to look a little different.
Don't do Jeffrey like that. If you put a number zero on your left tackle.
Exactly. That doesn't look the same. Guy. Exactly. It just doesn't look the same. So maybe they should just reserve it for, you know, the skilled guys.
It's a wide receiver DB number.
Exactly. Totally. Absolutely.
Sean Murphy Bunting is the Titans number zero this year.
Is he? So okay. Okay.
It gives me wide receiver DB
exactly.
Vibes.
It gives you wide receiver defensive back vibes.
Yeah.
Not offensive lineman.
No.
You know, defensive lineman.
A quarterback with a number zero, ew.
Yeah, exactly.
Ew.
And I just looked it up. So now with Bunting, he is the second player in the entire league that will wear that number so far.
Who's the first?
The first one apparently is with, I thought I saw the Jacksonville Jaguars, but there was a guy that wore it in 1973, and then they had to stop him from wearing it. So he tried to do, he had double zero, switched to zero, then they said, nah, you can't do that.
Well, Sean Murphy Bunting already making history in Tennessee. Love to hear that. Let's get back into your phones. Mike is on the line with a question for D-Mace. What's up, Mike?
guys. So two-part question, one sports, one not related. I thought double zero, not just zero, but double zero can be reserved for, like, big dudes.
Mm-hmm.
The number of regular zero, maybe I get that for, like, the receiver's name. But, like, when I think of, like, two zeros, I'm thinking of, like, that would be a perfect number for a D-tackle or anything like that. My question, though, came with the tight end side of the coin. I was looking to Chase and Michelle this morning, and they were talking about the importance of how they would want to go find a tight end in the draft. Mm-hmm. And my question to you, D-Mace, about that is how high of a draft pick would you realistically want to use on that? I was arguing that Chico Quanquo's growth, to me, is extremely important to this team, and I wouldn't want to go out and draft a pass-catching, like, an elite pass-catching tight end that would take away from the potential growth that he had. But I do understand that there's a need for depth there. And then my other question, which is not sports-related, is it's my understanding you have two kids, right, Derek?
Yes.
Okay, one boy, one girl?
Uh-huh.
Okay, so I'm about to have a girl in June. What is your one or two parenting tips for a girl, having a girl when you already had a boy? And I'll listen.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Mike. Well, we had our daughter first, Bailey. And, you know, she was the easy one. You know, Bailey was the easy one. She's just, you know, DJ, he was a little bit rambunctious, and he was the little firecracker running around the house, all, you know, doing things. But here's what I've learned about having a daughter. And this is what you're going to love, Mike. Even if you have a son, you're married, I think you don't truly understand love until you have a daughter. You really don't. Because it's something different. It's something like men can't explain it with their daughters. You ask every man that has a daughter that you know, spends time, that, you know, that's there and love them. You just can't explain it. You know, not to say that you don't love your wife or don't love your son, because I love my son to death. But it's just something about his sister. Like, that's just like he knows, don't mess with her. That's one. You don't mess with her. And everything that she says, it's like, it's right. I don't know if it's right, but she's coming right out of her mouth, it's like, it's right. And it's logical. And she thinks about it a lot. But my advice to you is, and when you have a daughter, is to show them what they need to look for. Be present with them, because just like a son's first love is his mom, a daughter's first love is her dad. And you want to keep it that way. Not to say she won't love somebody else and find a husband and love that person, but she will always refer back to dad in regards to that. So just love on her hard, and remember, she's always right.
And you love her, and she will eventually find someone else.
And she will
that
find
will love
exactly
her the way that she deserves.
Absolutely.
There is something special about that father-daughter relationship.
Now, in regards to the tight ends, drafting them high, this year's tight end crop, I don't think is as, you know, great of a tight end crop as we may seen in previous years. I think I'm looking on a big board here on PFF, and they have two tight ends at this particular time ranked in the top 30 of potential picks. Now, things can change. You know, there might be a tight end, Georgia's tight end. I love him. And he's coming out, what is he, 6'7", somewhere around there, can catch the ball really well. I think
Bowers,
he comes out
next year.
Next year, okay, mm-hmm. That's next year.
Yeah.
So they have, Georgia has two tight ends that's coming out next year, right?
Who is the other tight end?
Or is he coming out this year? One of their tight ends is coming out this year, Darnell Washington. That's the big guy, the 6'6 guy.
Uh-huh.
I really love him. But they got him ranked in PFF as the 68th, you know, best player.
Can't which take means, him at 41.
Yeah, you can't take, yeah. So he's going to fall out of the first round and maybe lower end of the second round, somewhere around there. But in today's offense, you need you a versatile tight end. You just do. Because we look at all the teams that typically advances in the playoffs, they have that one tight end that is a versatile guy that causes a matchup problem. That's why I was so, you know, sort of like mystified when the Titans chose not to sign Jonnu Smith back because of his potential to be a mismatch in their type of offense they were running. But then they go out and get Chig Okonkwo, and now Chig has proven that he can be a playmaker in this league. So if you can get you a tight end, you know, early in the draft or, you know, first 2 days in the draft, if you feel he fits what you need, then take him. Because the league has moved toward having that versatile tight end that can both line up with his hands in the dirt or line up outside as a receiver.
Another caller's point about when do you take a tight end, it's wherever you have him graded.
Yeah.
I mean, when do we ever see tight ends being taken in the top three, top five? Like rarely.
Yeah, rarely, yes.
Kyle Pitts was taken third overall. What was that, the 2021 draft? Mm-hmm. Whenever that was. So because he's just a freak of nature and exactly. It's just different as a tight end. So I think it's just wherever you have him graded, not really based off of need. I think Michael Mayer might be the only first round graded tight end in this year's draft, tight end out of Notre Dame.
Yeah. Well, they got the kid from Utah, Dalton Kincaid.
Yes. Yeah.
That's pretty good too. But I tell you what, the kid out of Georgia, the other kid that's coming out, he might just be a top five pick.
Oh, Brock Bowers?
Yeah, that kid's good.
He's something special.
He is good.
He is something special. Right back into your questions for D-Mace coming up next. Caroline Willie, D-Mace, 1025, 1063, The Game.
G-Mace. He played 15 years in the NFL.
Quick throw. Touchdown, Derek Mason.
He had over 12,000 receiving yards.
Midfield, and there he goes. 80 yards for the touchdown.
And now you can ask him anything. Have a question about football or life? Now's your time to ask D-Mace.
We'll welcome you in.
Now on Caroline, Willie, and
D-Mace.
On 102.5 and 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app.
Ask D-Mace. Get those questions in for D-Mace. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Back into your phones and your questions for D-Mace. Wes is on the line. He's been waiting very patiently. What's up, Wes?
Good morning. Happy Friday, guys. I'm got to apologize off the rip and just let y'all know I don't have a question that's going to downgrade Jared again today, so I apologize.
That's all right. We have next Friday, too.
Well, hey, there we go. So today I got a question. It's kind of a hypothetical, Derek. I'm going to put you in my shoes, and you try to tell me if I should feel bad or not. But I'm a diehard Braves fan. They obviously are looking pretty good. Everybody's got them kind of going to the World Series in Houston, kind of back and forth. So I was just looking at, you know, the bets and the money lines and everything like that. And I noticed that the Nationals, the A's, and the Rockies all have, like, the worst chances of getting there. So I put $15 down on each team, and they pay out $7,500. If, for some reason, the A's and the Braves make it to the World Series, should I feel bad if I want the A's to win so I can pocket some change over my Braves? Or how should I view that?
Thanks for your call, Wes.
And listen, money reigns supreme. So if they are getting you the cash, then so be it. Go for it. Get that cash. You put
money
in
talks.
Exactly. You put in $15, you would be scheduled to get $7,500. Well, root them on. You still love your Braves. You still love them. But, man, oh, man, you want that money, too, don't you?
And also, Wes, if I know anything about the A's, I don't think you have to worry about that. I think you're going to be just fine. But this is what I like to call hedging your happiness.
Exactly.
Whenever your team plays another team and you're really torn about it or you're really nervous about it, throw money on the other team because either way you win.
Exactly. You had a win-win situation.
Or you win with your heart.
Exactly. So either way, Wes, you would be a winner. But the likelihood of that happening is very slim.
But you can't shop with a Braves win. You can shop with money that you win with an Ace win.
Absolutely, unless you're talking about putting up a big chunk of change on a Braves. But I don't think you want to do that. So you can shop with that $7,500 you will win if indeed they win the World Series.
Chase texts into the text line and says, I'm confused. Can Chig not be an every down tight end?
Yeah, Chig can be an every down tight end. I think he, you know, obviously he needs to work on his blocking. But, you know, to me, blocking has always been a want to. Do I want to block? If I want to block, then I'm going to put myself in a position to, it doesn't have to be this demonstrative pancake block or throwing a guy to the ground. All it has to be is a seal, a wall off, just so the running back can get past you and you keep the guy in front of you engaged. Again, it doesn't have to be, you know, some knockdown block. Some of the best blocks sometimes is smaller guys getting underneath the pads of the bigger defensive end. And it's not like he, you know, just gave him a good shot, but he got in his way. And not only do I have to try to make the tackle, but I got to try to make the tackle going around this guy that's in front of me. And he might be just in perfect position. As long as you drop your hips, stay in good position, use strength and want to, then a lot of times you're going to be in a position block. So I think Chig, he will get a lot better in his blocking assignments. I think a lot of last year was they didn't feel comfortable enough or they didn't feel he knew enough in the blocking scheme that they can put him in there and leave him in there every down. I think this year, if they feel that way because of what he can do in the passing game, you know, you got to have him out there. It's like Kelsey. Is Kelsey the greatest blocker? No, but it's a want to with him. He wants to block, get in the way. And that affords him to be on the field more. It's not okay, bring Kelsey off when we're running and then put him back on when we're passing. Well, he does a good enough job. It's not great. He does a good enough job to whereas now we can leave him in all three downs. Hell, he's a great tight end anyway. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where Chig has to be. Again, you don't have to, if you're ranking, you know, tight ends in the percentile, you don't have to be, you know, ranked, you know, 98% in blocking. That's great. But if you're around 70, 75, somewhere around there, close to, then we can leave you on the field in blocking situations as well as passing situations.
Thank goodness for Jeff Swaim for that. Titans really lucked out with Jeff Swaim. Back into your questions for D-Maze. Jim is on the line with a question. What's up, Jim?
Hi. Hi, guys. D-Maze, first I'd say go green.
And white.
Thank you. After that, here's the question. I love blocking receivers. Was Hines Ward a dirty player, or was he just a great blocker? That's my question.
Thank you, Sparty. I don't think, because you gotta think about the era we were in. If Hines Ward is in this era of football, then he would be getting fined a lot, getting suspended, be deemed a dirty player because of the league has changed. They're getting a lot of that stuff out of the game, and rightfully so, because I mean, Hines would knock people out because he'd get them on blindside hits and he would use the crown of his helmet a lot of times to do it. But back then, that was the way the NFL was.
You were awarded.
Exactly.
For
it was
knocking
like,
him right
goodness,
in the head.
It's like, man, they gave you sometimes checks for knocking a guy out and putting him on his back and stuff like this. So
different time.
It's a different time. Was Hines a dirty player? I don't think he was a dirty player, but that's just me. I'm a receiver. You got to ask those, you know, those defensive backs that went up against Hines Ward, those safeties when he came in to block them. The crazy thing about Hines is that defensive backs had to sort of game plan for his blocking. Like their heads had to be on a swivel. Like, where's Hines Ward? Where's Hines Ward? Because if I don't pinpoint where he's at, he may get me on a blindside block. You can't do blindside blocks anymore. So back then, Hines wasn't dirty. It was just the nature of the game. It was hit or be hit. Get hit or be hit or do the hitting. And you had to keep your head on a swivel because you knew eventually, like, listen, if you got somebody, somebody was going to get you. Best believe Hines Ward kept his head on a swivel, too, because he knew all those times he was going in there and cracking a guy and putting him on his back that somebody was looking to do that to him on the defensive side of the ball. So I don't think Hines was a dirty player. It was just a different time.
Last one for you, D-Mace. One texter texts him with a question and says, what are you seeing wrong with your guy, Stetson Bennett? And why is he not getting talked about that much? And I joke because D-Mace said that Stetson Bennett was going to be a second round
pick. I still think he's going to be the one of those picks that people look and say, huh? Did they just pick him that high? I think he will go higher than what many think he will. He should. Why people aren't talking about him? Because he does nothing that wows you. He's consistent. He's a consistently good player that doesn't do any particularly thing great other than win. And as much as we talk about winning, like, he's a winner, he's a winner, he's, yeah, da, da, da. When it comes draft day, they're not talking about winners. They're talking about, can you run a 40? You know, how high, like your broad jump, how high can you jump, how many yards you threw for in college, you know, how many yards did you catch as a receiver, how many yards did you rush for. They're not sitting here and saying, you know, who's another individual that's won a lot of games, but okay, you throw like three or four guys out there. If you're basing his draft position on winning, they probably would be a first rounder.
Right.
I.e. Stetson Bennett. But
because he's lost, what, one game in college?
Exactly. He's just a winner.
Yeah.
He's a winner. I think the only guy that sort of came into play with was Tim Tebow. He's a winner, and I think they talked him into sort of being a first rounder.
Right.
Because of his winning attitude. If you looked at everything else, it was like, he doesn't really fit the bill of a quarterback that we think is a prototypical quarterback.
Same as some of the Nick Saban Alabama quarterbacks from the mid-2000s to 2010s, the McElroy, McCarron.
Those guys were winners. But at the end of the day, we're not drafting you because you're a winner alone. You got to do some things exceptionally well at the quarterback position. And I think that's sort of the thing that's going to keep Stetson Bennett from being one of those high quarterbacks is because, yes, he's a winner. He's a leader. But he doesn't do those other things great. He just does everything pretty good. You know, good enough to win you a ball game. But they're looking for the guy that's, you know, strong arm, can run a 4.3, you know, do all these things, these intangible things, well, not intangible things, but things you can't teach. You know, the height, the speed, their arm strength. I can't teach that stuff. Well, eventually, winners, they come along. You know, but a lot of times winners are not, you know, sometimes they're not your best athlete or the best player. They just have this innate ability to win when put in that position. And Stetson Bennett is one of those guys.
Sometimes all you ask your quarterback to do is take care of the football and put the ball in your playmaker's hands. For the most part, I think that's what Stetson Bennett was asked to do.
But it's not sexy. It's not.
It
doesn't wow you.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It's let the running game, let the tight ends, let the receivers do their job, let the defense win this game for us, and just do everything that you can to get them the ball and don't turn it over.
Absolutely.
Appreciate everyone for sending in their questions for D-May. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. But coming up next, friend of the station, Charles Robinson, was on his Yahoo Sports podcast and broke down the Titans' future at the quarterback position. Who does it involve and who might it not involve? We'll get into that coming up next. Caroline Willie, D-Mace, 1025-1063 The Game.